Hello, this is Dean Gocher. I'm founder and director of the Institution for Authority Research. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, and in all your ways acknowledge Him. Then He's the one who directs your paths. That's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. This program is about a process that I call diaprax, simply the dialectic process and praxis, put together. The praxis simply to practice, therefore to practice the dialectic process. Well, the last program I did was about the dialectic itself, the thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis. I'm going to continue on from where I left off. Maybe just a rehash. The thesis in a traditional mind would simply be the position that you have because your father gave you that position. You learn to obey his commands. He gave you something you could do and something you could not do. He set the standards for you in your home, in the family you were raised up in, and you learn to obey those standards. And that's how traditional people would see a thesis or a position. That was actually practiced in the old schoolhouse, the one-room schoolhouse, the traditional way where the teacher would be up front imparting facts, inculcating. It was up to you to learn that 2 plus 2 was 4, could not be any other number, and if you tried any other number, then the teacher would chasten you. They would reprove you, persuading you to always come up with the right answer and not the wrong answer. That's how we would see thesis. And if you had written, well, I feel or I think, like, well, I think it's 5 or I feel like it's 5, the issue really in the old school was right or wrong. It was just right or wrong. There was no in between. But when education moved over to relationship in the 50s, all of a sudden how you felt and what you thought became the language of the classroom. And that challenges a thesis, because the thesis would be, do what I tell you to do, as a parent telling a child, and the antithesis of the dialectic would simply be you feeling like you didn't want to do it. And so now you have this conflict, the conflict between the position your parent has and the position you have. Well, your position is built on your feelings. Their position might be as well, but how you're receiving it is a position that's not tied to your feelings. It's their feelings or their thoughts. And so that causes a top-down system because they have force. They can chasten you. They can reprove you if you don't obey their command. The dialectic starts not with the father. It starts with the children. The focus is on the children. The focus is on the feelings. And if you start there, then it's the father who produces antithesis. It's the father who causes conflict and tension in life, not the children who are challenging the father's position, and therefore they're the ones who have to be reproved. If you start with the children, if you make thesis the children, their feelings, then the role of those doing the dialectic to get to synthesis, to produce their desired outcome, is to undo the quote-unquote damage the parent has done to the child. And so that was pretty much the last program I went through. And, of course, that is in the face of the Word of God, because Jesus said, what my Father commands, that's what I do. I can of my own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge. My judgment is just because I seek not my own will, but the will of the Father, which has sent me. And then he's called all who follow him to have that same paradigm. That's called a patriarchal paradigm. Why are you doing what you're doing today? Well, because Dad said so. So the dialectic is all about undoing the effect of the father upon the mind and the action of the child. But see, again, the scripture says, Jesus said, and call no man father on earth, for one is your father, which is in heaven. For whosoever shall do the will of my father, which is in heaven, the same is my brother, sister, mother. So this top-down patriarchal system from Genesis to Revelation is all about obedience to the father. Jesus was obedient to his father even to death. So if you study the dialectic, it is simply the use of reasoning to justify why the children don't have to obey the parent. We went through Hebrews 12, 5 through 11, where it describes the traditional home in reference, actually, same system, same structure that God works through. They call this systems analysis, general systems theory. A Marxist by the name of Adorno, he said, God is conceived. Now, notice they're saying God is conceived more directly after a parental image. And so, according to Marx, it's the children, by they're submitting to the father, that creates the father. Now, the child by himself, according to Freud, the id is the real child, its impulse to be at one with nature, with pleasure in the moment. As the father restrains him, the child's ego is supposed to defend the id. In other words, the I will do, you know, will to power, that was Nietzsche, the will to power, the will to freedom for the child would be in his striking out at the father to allow himself to be normal, not abnormal, not neurotic, not accountable to his father, but accountable to his human nature, and therefore accountable to the nature of all mankind. But the child, individual child, is too weak in his own self to... he would have to die. He'd have to be facing the reality that dad's bigger than him and dad could kill him. And so he submits his will to the father's will. And therefore, that produces neurosis. That's all of counseling. You can call yourself a Christian counselor all you want. You're not a Christian. Because a true believer, now you can be a Christian, put quotes around it, because a true believer believes in the Father. See, has faith in the Father, believes his word, obeys him, and accepts chastening when he doesn't obey. And we covered last week where Hegel said that, or the last program, where Hegel said the child, contrary to appearance, is the absolute, the rationality. He is what is enduring and everlasting, the totality. So the sum total of society is found in the nature of the child, not in the father's authority over the child. Marx saying the same thing, a little different. He says once the earthly family, once this father over the children structure is discovered to be the same as the holy family, in other words, God over man, the former, the father's authority over the child, must itself be annihilated. And then he would say theoretically and practically, in other words, in the thoughts of the child and in his actions. Now, the thoughts would be private, but the actions would be public. It would be social. And Freud, following the same structure of thought, you can read Eros and Civilization by Herbert Marcuse, one of the two Bibles of the 60s, the other one by Norman O'Brien, Life Against Death, and both of them explain the merging of Freud and Marx. They were both dialectic, built off of not just Hegel, and as I went through last meet program, this is all from Genesis 3, 1 through 6. Those six verses in Genesis, I call Genesis, or Satan's Genesis Project, was all about the negating of the father's authority in the thoughts and the actions of the children. Same pattern, same system, dialectic process. Freud just simply said it's not really a decisive matter whether one has killed one's father or abstained from the deed if the function of the conflict and its consequences are the same. In other words, you know, you can keep dad around as long as he no longer is giving commands and chastening his children when they disobey. Now, the traditional Marxists simply carried a traditional mindset, a traditional communism. We're now dealing with communitization, democratization. People say, well, we're a democracy. Well, the difference between democracy and socialism and communism is just how fast you want to get there. But they're all built off of the same system, the dialectic process. This negating of the father's authority, they would see it as capitalism, which would be capitulation. So you capitulate, you submit yourself to somebody else, you recognize their authority. Say you work for somebody, you recognize that they're the boss, they're the owner of the property. And so that's why in the Russian Revolution they killed the kulaks. The kulaks were simply Stolypin's effort to bolster the economy of Russia. So he created laws that would allow an individual to have property and then tell people who worked for him, do it this way, not that way. You know, this is right, that is not. And would engender this patriarchal system And those kulaks were the ones who were killed by the communists, because that system that they were using is the father's authority over the children. Same thing followed in the French Revolution. It didn't matter whether the king was a good king or not. The issue was he was a king. Marx said the king's horses are the people's horses. Well, we find that same attitude in the garden. God's tree. Now, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, remember, God said they have become like us. And Satan said, you'll become like God. And what that meant was, now that Adam and Eve and all of mankind could now evaluate from their nature. And their nature, by the way, is approach pleasure, avoid pain. And in disobedience to the Father would be now lust. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Those three things, that's all we can find that we have in common. So the Russian Revolution, the French Revolution, the Chinese Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, all these revolutions, even today they call it a Velvet Revolution. Well, it's just more in the back door. It's more through education rather than just using guns up front. It's going through the classrooms. And it was simply changing the environment of the classroom. You no longer had a teacher up front telling students this is right and that is not, inculcating facts. Now you had a classroom environment of dialogue, because dialogue itself is equality. There's no top-down system in dialogue. You might have somebody who comes in and assists or encourages us to dialogue, or removes, because that's the role of facilitator, is to keep the patriarchal paradigm from developing in that room. Because traditional-minded students would be looking for somebody to lead that discussion, to come up with an outcome, and the role of the facilitator is to prevent that from happening. He has to intercede. He has to actually play the role of a leader, preventing a patriarchal leadership from developing, so that in the frustration of the group, that everybody would cave in, implode into this, well, we'll all just work together to solve the problem, because we can't depend on any one authority to lead us. We will become followers of the system. And so that took a lot of preparation, a lot of training. Well, the traditional Marxist simply shot the traditional farmer. The transformational Marxists did it different. They said, we'll change the environment. The environment directly affects the person. The traditional environment would be the teacher up front, the boss, the landowner, telling those who are under their authority, do it this way, don't do it that way. You know, this is right, that is not. And not allowing human nature freedom. In other words, feelings of the people working or the students was not the foundation for determining how the outcome would be arrived at or achieved. And so the agenda then was, if we can change the environment, if we can have the teacher-student partnership, in other words, the teacher's not going to inculcate, the teacher is going to discover truth with the students. And that would change the structure of communication in the classroom, structure of communication in the workplace, structure of communication in the church, structure of communication with the military and the police and all government. Every facet of society would be affected, because education affects every facet of society. So if you could change the classroom, Marx said the educator himself must be educated. And how that happened was, certainly John Dewey was trying to do this stuff back at early 1900s, but he still carried the philosophical language, which was a barrier, it was a burden, and it still was rigid. Well, back in the early teens, 19-teens, there was two men, famous Marxists, transformational Marxists, not traditional, that went to the Communist International with a new form of Marxism. They simply merged Sigmund Freud with Karl Marx. They saw the same pattern. They saw, okay, we're wanting to get rid of the father, but, you know, we don't necessarily have to kill him. If we can simply get him to participate in the process of change himself, if we could get him into dialogue, and see, when Dad would say, you can't go out, We would automatically try to get him in a dialogue. We didn't realize we're little communists at heart. We come as communists. We want to be common with the world. We want to play with this and, you know, be at one with the creation around us rather than obey God or parent who says, no, do what I tell you to do, which is not our natural inclination. And so we would simply ask our parents why. Now, the why with a question mark is simply to get our parents into dialogue. Because in dialogue, there's equality. When the dad says cannot, there's not equality. And so if we can get our parents into dialogue, equality then instantly negates, the father has abdicated his position of authority, and we have won the day. But the problem is, the dad then says, because I said so. Now, the because I said so, he's simply saying, I am the father. See, I am the creator. I caused to be. And you are the created. You're accountable to me. And so that top-down system is found in the is and not. It's in all the laws of nature. Law of gravity. Any math you do, is and not. Einstein came up with E equals mc squared. Or E is mc squared. Mass times speed of light squared. And how he did that, he filled up a room full of blackboards with two words. This is and is not. This is this, it is, cannot be that. And so he used this law of nature language to produce his outcome. Now, when you get to the theories, law of relativity, he stepped outside of that. He used dialectic reasoning. And so it's a theory. It's an opinion. We don't know. So you can take a guess on that, on rocks and plants and animals, and it'll succeed or it won't. But when you take this scientific process and you apply it to man, you've materialized him. And, of course, that's why it's called dialectic materialism. That's the traditional Marxists. The transformational Marxists called it historical materialism. Now, I don't want to bury you in all this, but when you and I think of history, we think of the books that we've read that told us what happened 1,000 years ago. But when psychology and philosophy and sociology deal with history, they might look at the past, but they're trying to find a common thread that ties the past and the present and the future all together. And, of course, what's that? That's the child's nature. That's our approach, pleasure, avoid pain. That's the commonality in all nature. So when you take psychology, psychology's history is all about the environment you were raised in. What is your history? It's not what you memorized from the past. It's the environment you were raised in. Were you raised in a traditional home? Or were you raised in a laissez-faire home? As a matriarchal, you know, you can do whatever you want to do as long as nobody gets hurt. You're still an individual, but there's still this. And boy, have we seen that today? You know, this matriarchal has produced a generation of maladjusted kids on drugs, doing whatever they feel like doing. And of course, the dialectic people would say, "Well, we don't want that to happen. We want them to work together socially." But we have to take them through that. We have to detach the children from this father's voice. They're going to become isolated, anxious, and they're going to try to reattach back to a father's structure that might be a gang. And so to prevent that from happening, we have to take them all the way through to where now it's social. In other words, they can't think outside of what the group, what everybody has in common. And so their history is about, are you from a traditional home experience? Are you from a transitional home experience? Are you a transformational home experience? In other words, are your parents, say, from conservative all the way to liberal? And, of course, emotion is tied up in all that. Because in a traditional home, you're not controlled by emotions. In transition, you're controlled by emotions. You're trying to do your own thing, but you still have this emotion of feeling guilty. Because you're caught between, we looked at Romans 7, you know, I do that which I don't want to do, and I don't do that which I want to do. And so you're caught in this antithesis, this tension state, this neurotic state. It's called belief-action dichotomy. You say you believe, but you don't act accordingly. Well, the dialectic wants to rescue all of society from that transition stage and move everybody over to the transformational stage of where we're all just working together. We working for us. That's communism. That's communism. And so in your life history as a psychiatrist, I would simply deliver you from the effect of your parent by simply asking you how you feel. Because how you feel hasn't changed. It didn't change from the moment you were born, that you became aware, anyway, of your own life, to right now. It's all about how you feel and what you think. That doesn't change. That's our human nature. And so they start with that. They start with you as a child all the way through your life. What affected you? What damaged you? What has prevented you from being your own person? And so the transformational Marxists, the George Lukács and Karl Korsch, back in the early teens, took this way of thinking into the Communist International, were kicked out. Because the attitude was, you can't have a revolution without bullets and blood. What are you going to do, put people on couches and ask them how they feel and what they think? And, of course, their answer would be yes. But they were kicked out. And they met in Thuringia, Germany, in the mid-20s, started the first Marxist work week, named themselves the Institute of Social Research, and then ended up in Frankfurt, Germany, where eventually 21 of these Marxists, transformational Marxists, were meeting. Hitler became chancellor in 1933. They fled Germany, and most of them ended up in the United States of America. They went directly into our universities. There are already some of these guys had already been to the States. Kurt Loewen, I believe, had been here. He wasn't a direct member of the Frankfurt School, but he had edited their works. He was familiar with their works. He was actually, his work was essential to making their ideology work. And so when the Frankfurt School came here, Paul Lazarsfeld went into Columbia. His graduate student, who earned his doctor's degree under him, was James Coleman. Well, James Coleman was a man the Supreme Court turned to for advice on education. James Coleman's work back then was equality of opportunity. Well, when you have the father in control of the children, and you have fathers in the town or in the neighborhood, all maybe having different position on things, then the children don't have equality of opportunity, because one child would need to see another child misbehaving according to his dad's standards, and he wouldn't relate with him. And so James Coleman's book, Equality of Opportunity, was what the Supreme Court studied to deal with education, this transformational Marxist work. He wrote another book, which is still popular today, Adolescent Society. You have to understand that this has been around for a long time. The idea of kindergarten was simply allowing the children a time to be social outside of parental influence. And we all thought, oh, isn't that cute? The kids are all playing together. You know, the girls are playing at the oven, and the boys are, you know, playing with toys together. And they get a chance to play with toys that probably they didn't have at home. So they had a time to learn, and we thought, well, this is also a breaking into the school system, so that they could more easily flow in their learning. But we didn't realize the real reason for kindergarten was to detach the children from the traditional home experience. And it was trying to get the kids of the same age, in the same moment, to find commonality. And in that finding that commonality, then they would go home and they would find, well, now they were at odds with their parents, but they found a commonality that justified their antithesis, their dissatisfaction with a parent's authority. Now, a kindergarten student isn't really going to take that very far, but they've had the experience. So the longer the children were in this isolated state, separated, to their age, we thought, well, it's age appropriate for learning. But the real intent was, now, if you had a one-room schoolhouse, the younger kids would tell on the older ones. And so that would make sure that child was thinking about what dad would say in regards to any of his activities in the school. But when the classes went equal age, same age, that was removed. You might have two kids in there once in a while, that happens, But they, because now it's sort of a secret society, you know, we can do things that aren't going to necessarily get back to mom and dad because we're doing it as a group and you don't want to tell on your friends. There is a loyalty then that comes to the group, common, what they all have in common, communism, that is now cutting, coming between the father-child structure of thought, children accountable to their parents. Well, the adolescent age was key to this because, again, James Coleman's book, The Adolescent Society, he's saying, why don't we use this adolescent age and create a new society? Now, adolescence is artificially produced because at the age 8th grade, at the age of 12, puberty sets in, and that now all of a sudden the children have an adult's body developing. They're still children, but they have an adult's body. And in the old school, you began to go to work. You began under your father in a farming community. You would then learn your father's morals. You would, as you're going through this becoming an adult, you would retain this top-down way of thinking, this right way to behave, right way to think, wrong way to behave, wrong way to think. And your father or the authority over you would maintain that morality in the workplace. Well, when you create the adolescent society, now all of a sudden you have boys and girls of the same age with all those driving hormones going, and they're detached from the father's authority. So James Coleman, Adolescent Society, was all about how to remove the children. He writes, for equality of opportunity to take place, the family as a unit must be weakened. And so we find all of a sudden the Frankfurt School, through James Coleman, who was a graduate of Paul Lazarsfeld, who, by the way, was influential with AT&T. He did a lot of meetings with a lot of corporations. Reach out and touch. That was feelings. And it marketed. And marketing is about feelings today. Not so much that the product's going to last 20 years. Quality is that you feel good when you come into the store and you see it. Feelings are involved now. It's not just practical as far as this thing's going to last for a long time. And then there was Paul Theodore Adorno. He went to Berkeley, wrote The Authoritarian Personality. All teachers in this nation and around the world, when they are certified, they're certified according to Bloom's taxonomies. And I write quite a bit about this material because this is the education was the key to changing society and changing the world. Bloom, in his second book on page 166, uses the German word Weltanschauung, worldview or paradigm, we would say today. And then he gives us two names, Theodore Adorno and Erich Fromm. Well, who were these men? These were transformational Marxists. Adorno was meeting in Frankfurt, came to the States. Fromm, same thing, came to the States. Fromm was popular in the 60s and the 70s, made Marx, one author said, made Marx lovable by the left. And then Herbert Marcuse goes down to San Diego. These guys just had free reign. Eros and Civilization, written by Herbert Marcuse, one of the Bibles of the 60s, the two. Norman O'Brien's Life Against Death, the other one. And so that's what happened in the 60s, was transformational Marxism, instead of shooting the fathers, was simply, let's get the children in the classroom, get them to share how they feel and what they think, which was psychology, but do it in a group. Now, J.L. Moreno kept haranguing Freud, said, you're doing it one-on-one. You're getting the children's oughta, shoulda, mighta, coulda. Remember, you can't talk to your dad. Now you talk to yourself. Now you have two or more. Dialectic is two or more. And you go, I oughta, I shoulda, I mighta. And if I then can do you in a group, see, role-playing is in a group. Role-playing, there is no religion. There is no father's authority in role-playing. And so Moreno wrote a book, Who Shall Survive? And it's all about the use of this process to deliver the children from the father's authority. And so we had all of a sudden, question authority just blow up in the 60s. We had the Beatles. We had all these things happening at the same time, all addressing how the children felt and what they thought. And all of a sudden we found the parents were not just irrational, which, you know, they weren't up with the times. They were the stick in the mud, but they were now irrelevant. Now, the only relevance the parents had was they had the money. And all of a sudden, the marketing then went to the kids. The parents started funding the children, and marketing went to the children, to where today, that's the big market, is the children now control society. Approach pleasure, avoid pain, lovers of pleasure, more than lovers of God, is now the platform for the world. And that's all the result of this dialectic way of thinking, where you start with the children. You make them the thesis, and no longer the father is the thesis, as we find in Genesis 3:1-6, Satan doing. He removed the father as the authority to evaluate from, and he creates an environment where Eve can share her opinion, nor touch it. And then she said, lest she die, and then Satan said, you won't die. And now she's thinking, good for food, pleasing eyes, desires to make one wise. And so she evaluates God's word, which is now negated. It's irrational and it's irrelevant. From there on, she is godless. And whether it was Genesis 3:1-6, or contemporary education today, or total quality management, total quality leadership, you can put any acronym you want on it, it's the same procedure. It produces a godless person. And so that's what's happened to our culture today. We've done a paradigm, they call it a shift, but it's in truth a paradigm change. We have changed the way we think, we've changed the way we act, and we're seeing our culture implode around us because, I just say, you think the Berlin Wall came down because communism was defeated. No, the Berlin Wall came down because communism had succeeded. And so we live today in a communist world.